Well, good afternoon. The Committee of Higher Ed and Workforce Development Committee will be in order. Today's date is Tuesday, March 4th, 2014, and let the record reflect we do have a quorum. So thank you very much, members, for getting here promptly, as we do have confirmations, and so we do need that quorum. So we will begin our hearing today with the confirmations, and we're always pleased to do those because confirmations are really about people being willing to come forward and give of their time, their expertise, and their talent to join us in making sure that all of our institutions are truly nation-leading. So we will begin with the confirmations of the Minnesota Higher Education Facilities Authority, which that facilities authority provides a unique function and makes a big difference, particularly to our private college education community. So at this time, I'd like to call forward Mark Misukanis and David Rowland.
Madam Chair and members, for the record, my name is Mark Misukanis, and I'm before you today for the confirmation hearing for the board that you just mentioned.
Very good. And members, you do have information about both of these gentlemen in your packet, so you're welcome to review it. But I guess what I'd like, we'll start with you, Mr. Misukanis, as long as you began the conversation. And I believe you're related to another person who we see around our committee often, and that's Katie, right? What is your relation?
Happen to be her father.
That's what I thought. Well, well, we really appreciate Katie. So why don't you tell us about yourself? And I know you've actually spent time in the higher ed world. Give us a little bit about your background and share what your vision is for this role and why you're willing to take on this effort.
Madam Chair and members, thank you. Let me just kind of speak. You have apparently my background material in front of you, but allow me to speak to the relevant parts of that resume or the CV that are, I think, are important for your consideration here. First, my undergraduate and graduate work was in economics at the University of St. Thomas and at Wisconsin. I have a PhD in education policy and administration with a focus on higher education from the University of Minnesota. I actually served as a nonpartisan staff person in this body for 20 years, doing a variety of committees. I spent 12 years as a fiscal analyst for the K-12 committee. The last 8 years, I was the director of the, at the time, a separate office of fiscal policy analysis. The person has that role now is Eric Nauman, a good friend of mine. I have served as an adjunct teacher in public administration at Hamline University for the last 12 years. I actually taught some classes online as well. Prior to that, at Capella University. And an item that is not on the CV, but only because it occurred after I had made application to the governor's office to serve on this board, I currently have a one-year term appointment as an assistant professor at Metro State, where I'm teaching public policy, public administration, information management, and the like. So it's very related to the work that I've been doing here in my whole career, and also the work that the teaching I've been done at Hamline. So that's kind of the summary of that, my background. I think it's important for you to know why I'm interested in serving, and there's really a couple of reasons. I've been involved in public policy my whole life, so I'm interested in continuing to serve the people of the state, as you so, I think, mentioned, Madam Chair. I clearly have an interest in higher education. I'm sorry, I should really back up. The one thing in my background I did mention, I was a director of finance and research at the Office of Higher Education for 6 years. So I've kind of been in the loop here for quite a while. So from that background, I have a clear interest in higher ed. But I think more important for this particular role is I believe in this program. To those on the committee that are maybe not that familiar with it, the authority issues bonds for the nonprofit institutions, higher education institutions in the state. It's been around since the early 70s. It's well proven. And the primary goal is to, of course, aid these institutions in constructing facilities, but at a lower cost. So this is really a cost-saving issue for the students of the state that make that choice to go to those schools. I strongly believe in the program, and that's my major concern serving on this board, is the continuation and stability and strength of the program. And then finally, I think one of the strengths that I bring to this appointment is my breadth of experience in higher education. I've kind of went over a few of the things, but I have connections to MinSCU, University of Minnesota, obviously the nonprofits. And I've actually done consulting work for for-profits. So I have a foot in all four sectors, if that makes sense. So, Madam Chair, with that, I guess I'd stand for questions from the committee.
Well, thank you very much, and it really is an impressive amount of experience to bring to this role, and so I thank you for putting your name forward. I think it is a unique program that we offer to be able to take advantage of the credit and worthiness of the state on behalf of and for our not-for-profit privates. Do you know if this practice is done in other states?
Madam Chair and members, I'm aware that there are similar organizations in other states, but they do tend to do work related to hospitals as well.
Interesting.
I'm not sure. I want to make it clear, too. These are revenue bonds or tax exempt, but these are not GO bonds on the part of the state. So it's the institutions that are backing the repayments.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Rowland.
All right, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here today. My name is David Rowland. I live in Edina, Minnesota, with my wife and two children. I work downtown St. Paul, where I have worked for the same employer for over 17 years. I'm here seeking confirmation to the Board of the Minnesota Higher Education Facilities Authority. I have served on the board since February 10th, 2001. During that period, I have held officer positions and chaired the board. I have been nominated for this position by three governors from three political parties, beginning with Governor Ventura, twice by Governor Pawlenty, and now by our current governor, Governor Dayton. I currently hold the position on the board as the, quote, municipal expert, which is a role outlined in the authority's authorizing statute. I'm a graduate of the University of Notre Dame, where I studied economics, politics, and philosophy. I also earned a master's degree from Northwestern University's Kellogg Graduate School of Management. I spent 9 years working in public finance. During this period, I was involved in projects involving cities, counties, hospitals, water and sewer systems, and a variety of other issuers and financing types. But my focus was on education finance, where I worked with public schools and institutions of higher education. In 1996, I joined the St. Paul Companies as an investment analyst, where I was part of a team managing the company's fixed income investment portfolio. As a property casualty insurer, the company was an active investor in municipal bonds. So I was able to leverage my experience and knowledge as well as to develop a new perspective on the industry. Today, I am head of fixed income investments for Travelers. I manage a team of over 40 people, and we manage a portfolio of roughly $70 billion. The portfolio includes over $35 billion of municipal bonds, including over $3.5 billion in the higher education sector. In 2000, Marianne Remedios, the executive director of the authority, asked if I would be interested in applying for the board. I was interested then, and I continue to be interested today. The board has a high level of professionalism, efficiency, and effectiveness. The board's mission is clear, and it is a positive force in the development and preservation of a robust system of higher education for our state. I am proud of my service, and I look forward to continuing to serve. I appreciate your time and consideration of my nomination.
Thank you very much. And really, you two bring a very impressive background, and to have that kind of expertise in the private market brought to what we're trying to accomplish here for our not-for-profit privates is really unusual, and we appreciate your willingness to continue to serve. Are you the longest-serving member at this point?
No.
Well, so who has served longer?
Catherine Brewer has been on for four terms. This will be my fourth.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you. Any questions on behalf of our members? Senator Sheeran.
Yes, I have some questions, although I can ask them at another time if you have a tight agenda at this time. It's generally about the Minnesota Higher Education Facilities Authority.
Why don't you ask a question? We do have a tight time, but go ahead.
Well, I have a couple. One is you sell bonds that are generally private nonprofit educational institutions. When this process was established, were there a set of parameters or guidelines that the legislature established for you in relationship to determining the conditions and the terms under which you did these expenditures for private universities?
I would just say that I'm not an expert on the statute that authorized the authority, but there are no expenditures. The authority is a self-funded political subdivision or political entity, and as Mark explained earlier, these financings are really solely the obligation of the borrowing of the private college or university. And so there's no state funds that are actually subsidizing or being dispersed in the process.
Maybe I wasn't clear about that, but the guarantee for the bonds is not the state of Minnesota; it's the institutions themselves,
yep.
Correct? But you make a determination of whether or not you're going to sell the bonds or what projects are not eligible for this. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And there's a process that you're using for making those decisions. But have you established those processes yourself, or did we? And you don't know the answer to that, so I can look that up at another time. But then I also read on the site here that public schools, I'm sorry, I lost it here, public schools are eligible, it sounds like, but are limited to child care and parking facilities or special projects authorized by special legislation. Would you mind giving me a read on whether or not that happens, and if it does, what's happening?
It does not happen. We do have the executive director with us, and if that's appropriate,
So, Madam Chair, Senator, and I can perhaps answer that. There actually, I think, have been two issues for community colleges under that provision, but those are quite old, and I believe they've been paid off. But in any event, there are no reason. It is now all the private.
And, Senator Sharon, I suspect that the part of the questions is really looking at this as a template for perhaps how we might work on Senator Claussen's bill. And so I do appreciate the line of questioning and had some of those same questions, and so think that we could do some offline research and use that.
That's absolutely the basis of my question is in relationship to Senator Claussen's bill. So we'll just have to do some research. I thought I could get an easy answer.
Thank you.
For the shortcut.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so at this time, if there are no further questions, I'd like to entertain a motion.
Madam Chair.
Senator Claussen.
Madam Chair, I move the appointment of Mark Mitsakonis and David Rowland as board members of the Minnesota Higher Education Facilities Authority to be recommended to confirmation.
Thank you, Senator Claussen. So Senator Claussen moves that the appointment of Mark Mitsakonis and David Rowland as board members of the Minnesota Higher Education Facilities Authority be recommended to be confirmed. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Congratulations and thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Now we have one more confirmation before us. I'd like to call to the chair, Board of Trustees of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities confirmation, Elise Ristow. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Welcome to the committee. So again, we thank you for your willingness to serve, and we do have information about you and your background, but we'd love to hear you tell us a little bit about yourself and why it is that you'd like to be a trustee and your vision for your role as that.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. It is an honor to be with you today. I am a recent graduate of Minnesota State Mankato. I received a double major in psychology and communications. I am originally from Hutchinson, Minnesota. Was not born there, but spent most of my life there. Currently living in Mankato now. I started on the board back in September. And one of my biggest reasons when I ask this question is why do you want to be on the board is that I love students and I want to advocate for them and I want to be sure that the board knows what students want and knows what they need. And I love being a voice for them and being able to take back to the board what the students want.
So when did you graduate?
This past December.
Okay, very good. Any questions?
Madam Chair?
Senator Claussen.
Just you in your bio here, you talk about working with nonprofits. Can you share some of that?
I spent roughly 3.5 years working for the Southwest Initiative Foundation, just doing different projects and really being involved with them and learning more about the foundation and what they do. And it really helped me grow a greater appreciation for not only nonprofits, but for greater Minnesota and how important it is to our state and what we can do for them.
And members, I just want people to understand that while Ms. Rousseau is no longer a student, she was a student at the time of the appointment, which is what the qualifications are for that appointment. Any other questions? Well, thank you very much. I'd be willing to entertain a motion.
I'd like to move this Mankato and Elise Rista as the State University student member.
Very good. Thank you so much. So Senator Sharon moves that the appointment of Elise Ristow as trustee to the Board of Trustees of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities be recommended to be confirmed. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You have been confirmed. And now this will go to the floor. Thank you very much. Well, that completes our confirmations. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to make a request of our committee and the staff. I am interested in looking at the diversity in representation in the different boards of higher education in terms of gender, ethnicity, and ability. Mm-hmm. And would like to see if the chair would be willing to request some information about the efforts that these different institutions make to submit recommendations to the governor and in general the process that is put in place to ensure that we have boards that actually represent the different constituencies in Minnesota. I see that we often confirm appointments that in my view, do not reflect the diversity of the state and would like to see an effort moving in that direction. I understand, of course, that this is the governor's responsibility at the end since he submits these names, but oftentimes I think, we receive recommendations from individuals who are interested, who we absolutely appreciate and welcome. I think this is a tremendous responsibility they take, and these are volunteers, so
right.
I don't want to undermine, their... obviously their effort and their participation, but I do think that we need to make a better effort to recruit diverse candidates.
Thank you, Senator Torres-Ray. Point noted, and we had actually planned this session to tackle some of that process and had spent some interim time working on it and then learned that really the House wasn't prepared to move with some of our recommendations, so we're tabling that until next session, but I will make certain that we include that as part of our overall policy recommendation, and I'll make sure to share it with you before we go much farther in that. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, well, members, just to give you an overview of what we plan to do for the remainder of our hearing, this, as we all know, is two things. We've talked about it as being the bonding session, and then the governor has dubbed it the end session. And so in keeping with both of those things, we're going to tackle them hard and early. And with regard to the bonding side of things, we heard the bonding bills last year in our committee. So we did not want to revisit each of those bills. But on the other hand, the way that the session worked last time is each chair was asked to submit to Senator Stumpf a letter of recommendation. Well, last year we didn't have much of a bonding budget, and so I submitted my own recommendation, and that letter is in your members' packet. It's not in everybody's, but it is in the members' packets, and so I would call your attention to that. It's on the top of your pile. And what you'll see is I basically said last year that our recommendation was to just do HEPR because we didn't have much room to do anything else, and we felt infrastructure was so important. And then I gave a little shout-out to put the Bell Museum aside separately and take care of that and get that over with. But now here we are, and it's much different because we can expect and we're going to champion for higher ed to be a significant portion of the bonding bill. And historically, it's averaged somewhere, as I understand it, between 30% and 40%. So it really is a big part of what will come forward this year. So we have a pretty hefty responsibility. On the one hand, we aren't going to be hearing the bills because they've been heard, but on the other hand, we are going to put forward a committee recommendation. So what we have asked the two systems to do is just – you know, and not go into tremendous amount of detail because we don't want to be repetitive and to respect your time, but to give us an overview of their recommendation. So we've are graced with President Kaler, and I see some of the regents here and some of his leadership, and so they will have a chance to present their overview, and our staff has prepared a broad summary of that, and that follows the letter from that I sent to Senator Stumpf. And then Minskew will do the same thing, and Chancellor Rosenstone and his team will do that for Minskew. Following that, you'll get a survey tomorrow, and we'll ask for your thoughts, whether or not you just want to go with what the systems have requested and you're just going to support theirs, or whether you'll have a chance to rank things. And that will be the basis of our recommendation. I won't submit a letter without talking to you, and you'll have a chance to comment on it. So that's the purpose of this. And then following it, time permitting, it's our plan to do the unsessioned bill. And, you know, we won't go over, so if we don't get to it, we'll move it. But wanted to send the signal that these are the two important things and wanted to hit the ground running. So that's why they're both on your agenda today. So if there aren't any further questions, I will ask President Kaler to come forward. Oh, and members, also it should be noted, and it is noted in your packet, that the bonding committee has visited pretty much all the sites that you're going to hear about today. And so, again, that's why this is a broad overview.
Madam Chair, thank you. And thank you for this opportunity to present the University of Minnesota's 2014 capital plan to this committee. I'm Eric Kaler, president of the University of Minnesota, with campuses in the Twin Cities, Duluth, Crookston, Morris, and Rochester, and our research and outreach centers across the great state of Minnesota. I'm joined here today by the university's vice president for university services, Pam Wheelock, and by the chair of the Board of Regents, Rick Beeson, and Regents Tom Devine and Patty Simmons. Madam Chair, a year ago, I sat before you and told you what our priorities were, and there were two. One was to put a lid on tuition for Minnesota resident undergraduate students, and the second was to seek an investment to fund a research initiative that highlighted the scholarly strengths of the university and needs and opportunities for the state of Minnesota. And in the end, this committee partnered with the students and faculty of our state's only land-grant research university. You helped us to freeze tuition for Minnesota resident undergraduates. And you helped us to fund a key research initiative, MnDrive, the Minnesota Discovery Research and Innovation Economy Fund. And the feedback from students, parents, and scientific and business community has been overwhelmingly positive. So I'll start my comments with simply thank you.
Thank you.
Today, I come here to speak to you about facilities, and I want to thank this committee and the legislature for your support of the university's new physics and nanotechnology building, and which will celebrate its grand opening on April 24th, and thank you, too, for supporting funding of the Biomedical Discovery District and the new Cancer and Cardiovascular Research Building, which opened last year. And, Madam Chair, members of the committee, this simply would not have been possible without your help, and I'm grateful for that. You've demonstrated great faith in us and in higher education, and I pledge to you that we will continue to be good stewards of the resources you have shared with us. And Madam Chair, let me review with you quickly some basics about the university. And you have in your packet copies of the small number of slides that we'll show you. They detail our three-pronged mission as Minnesota's only public land-grant research university: research and discovery to create new ideas, products, cures, and treatments. Teaching and learning, preparing the state's workforce for tomorrow and the days and years after tomorrow. Outreach and public engagement, working with communities across the state to tackle and solve some of Minnesota's most pressing challenges. As for our students, we're serving 15% more students than we did at the turn of the century, and 73% of them are Minnesota residents. In 2012, more than 46,000 students received financial aid, and the U itself awarded more than $56 million in aid. We award 100% of Minnesota's dentistry, pharmacy, and veterinary medicine degrees, and our four-year undergraduate graduation rates have doubled over the past 14 years, moving students more quickly into the state's workforce. And finally, about 70% of all healthcare professionals in the state were trained at the university. Despite massive federal cutbacks, we attracted $749 million in research funding last year, ninth most among public universities in the United States, in a state that ranks 21st in population. And we continue to launch startups based on technology and intellectual property developed by our faculty. The bottom line, I think, is clear and dramatic. We are the economic and innovation engine for the state, with every state dollar invested in the university generating $13.2 in benefit to the state's economy. Let me now turn to this year's capital request, which is based on the principles our Board of Regents uses when developing our six-year capital plan. Our request seeks, first off, to ensure student success, to ensure research impact, to fulfill our statewide mission, to protect our public assets and investment, and to responsibly manage our resources. This year, make no doubt, we are asking for a substantial facilities support, and we are mobilizing the university community, including our alumni, so that all legislators come to understand the value we bring to the state and understand the importance of our request. In this day and age, we need modern facilities to replicate the real industry and workplace environments our graduates will move into. Vice President Wheelock is going to talk about each of the components of the request in just a minute. All are important as approved by a Board of Regents. But make no mistake, HEPR funding is our top priority. On our Twin Cities campus alone, 30% of our buildings were constructed 70 years ago or longer. And across all of our campuses, it's about 25% built as long ago as the 1940s. President Obama was here last week and pointed out that infrastructure that age qualifies for Medicare. We have to get into these buildings, make the kinds of repairs that they need to continue useful lives, plumbing, wiring, shingling the roof, and replacing the windows. We need state investment to refurbish 71 projects from Crookston to Morris, from Duluth to Rochester, and here in the Twin Cities. We like to say HEPR is cheaper. It's true, and it's stuck. It's cheaper to tackle the hole in the roof and the leak in the pipe than to wait until the entire building needs to be redone. Besides HEPR funding, we're also seeking renovations or new construction for many STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics-related facilities, including labs that will help the state fight invasive aquatic species and strengthen the chemical sciences and advanced material sciences on our Duluth campus, which will positively impact the economy of Northeast Minnesota. We are seeking to continue our partnership with you and the state to help fund facilities to ensure we can fulfill our mission of solving Minnesota's biggest problems and preparing the next generation of leaders for the state and our economy. In the end, we can't train and educate the workforce of tomorrow in last century's facilities. Thank you very much for considering our request. Thank you for listening. And now let me turn this over to Vice President Wheelock.
Thank you, President Kaler, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I would point out on this slide as well, these are in priority order as approved by the Board of Regents for the University of Minnesota. And HEPR funding is our top priority, as President Kaler indicated. These are funds that are used across the system for very important projects. We have 71 buildings that are have projects that are slated and ready to go. We have a very strong record of spending these funds quickly. The project funds from 2010 and 2011 are fully expended. 2012 are 89% under contract and are about to be finished. So the money gets out there quickly, it gets to work quickly, and it enhances our assets and improves student experience very quickly as well. These projects are across the state. We've listed a few examples here. I won't go into all of those. Chino Hall, for example, in Duluth, is the replacement of mechanical systems to heat and cool the building. The funds will be used for fire and life safety upgrades, for code improvements, and associated hazardous material abatement, for example, asbestos ceiling tiles. The upgraded building will serve as a space for the American Indian Learning Resource Center and for graduate and undergraduates' educational programs and improved classroom space for multiple disciplines. On the Twin Cities campus, mechanical engineering. This was a building built in 1948, and like mechanical engineering, we have many buildings that are post-World War II buildings or 1970s buildings, and our need for investment in those buildings has outpaced the growth in the bonding bill for the state of Minnesota. So we have a number of buildings with critical systems that need to be improved. This also happens to be the home of one of the top-ranked mechanical engineering departments in the country. So this is a key facility for us programmatically. Many of you have been through the building. This is an example of what you see on the left, and it's critically important that we make those improvements. We would also be able to make those improvements coincidental with the improvements in Tate. So thanks to you, we will be opening next month the nanotechnology and physics building. We'll be able to vacate much of the space in Tate, and so that allows us to do staging to make the mechanical engineering improvements as
well.
Excuse
me, Vice President Wheelock, we've all seen that, but we can't remember where is that?
That's in the mechanical engineering building, and that looks like a shot of the basement where some of the welding space is and the limitations on the HVAC system and the electrical system.
Yeah, we toured
system.
It. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yep. So speaking of Tate, this is actually a new project request, not because it doesn't have integral systems that need to be improved, but we're also changing the functionality of the space. We're adding modern classroom facilities. We're adding some new square footage on the north and east side of the building, and we're reconfiguring space to meet our programmatic needs for the department as well. Microbial sciences, you may remember from the president's remarks, the governor and the legislature approved funding for MinDrive. Two of the key initiatives in MinDrive are about food safety and about bioremediation of environmental conditions, and that would be the focus of much of the research that would be conducted in this space. This is a collaboration between the College of Vet Med, the College of Biological Sciences, and the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Sciences. Some of the examples of the work that they would do would be to mobilize nitrogen, iron, and phosphorus from soil and to degrade toxic compounds and provide barriers to pests to support improved agricultural production and water quality, or using microbes to moderate toxicity in metals or remove metals from waste streams and support cleaner mining processes. Or to use take the results have shown that chemical contaminants in water used to fracture shale for natural gas extraction can be remediated by carefully matched microbial agents. The work that is done collaboratively within those colleges has very real application to industry and to agriculture here in the state of Minnesota. This would be a new building, a new space that would be on the St. Paul campus, very near the Cargill building. The top priority for the Chancellor of Crookston is actually to make an investment to provide enhanced recreational space for the students on campus. The student enrollment has grown in Crookston, and unfortunately, we continue to use facilities that are quite dated. The sports building was constructed in the early years of the 19th or 20th century in about 1930. It received some expansion in 1980, but it is still limited in its functionality for use by students and for the student athletes who have priority on that space by the time their programmatic use is done and available to the broader student population. It tends to be late in the evening and extremely limited. This is an important asset for that campus. The facilities in the community are limited. We do share some of the use for an ice arena, for example, but we have extremely limited options in the community for student recreational space. And for recruitment and retention at the campus, this is a top priority for the chancellor. Laboratory Improvement Fund, we have three primary projects. One is for improved facilities for our B laboratory. Our research there is longstanding. We have been in bee research since 1918. The primary researcher, Dr. Marla Spivak, is a MacArthur Genius Award winner, and she is using space that is essentially a utilitarian cinder block space that we need to revise and update to support the combination of research, teaching, and demonstration activities that are the core activities of this research group's work. We also have funding requests for improvement to the Aquatic Invasive Species Lab. laboratory space. This is clearly an important priority for the state of Minnesota, for the upper Midwest. And the research right now is being conducted in a former tractor garage. So the investments would allow the researchers to better manage exposure to light, to noise, and vibration, which are critical for some of the research particularly focused on carp. It would also modernize the effluent controls and manage security of the building to associate the work more correctly with the research, or the space more correctly with the research. The third target is for greenhouse facility replacement, supporting plant-based research and teaching. The existing building is actually considered obsolete due to its age, construction method, and just general condition. The building houses a rare and critical plant collection used by the College of Biological Sciences for teaching and supports cultivation of thousands of specimens used to teach 16 different undergraduate classes. And finally, the Chemical Sciences and Advanced Materials Building. This is a request that would be at UMD, top priority for the chancellor. It really builds on the STEM orientation that they have in their program. The Swenson College enrollment is actually the largest on the Duluth campus. In the time frame from 2008 to 2012, the enrollment grew 19%. Department enrollment grew 40% in undergraduate admission in the same time frame. In 2012, the college actually had to deny admission to 150 qualified applicants due to inadequate laboratory and learning spaces. So the current building was constructed in 1948. No significant renovation has occurred since that time. And then the new building will free up lab space from existing space, allowing them to be used, that space to be used for teaching purposes. So, Madam Chair, this is our request. The governor has provided a recommendation of $40 million for HEPR and has fully funded the other projects with the exception of microbial sciences research and the chemical sciences and advanced material building. So with that, Madam Chair, we appreciate your time and welcome any questions that you might have.
Well, thank you very much. I'm sure that there are questions. I just wanted the committee to know that when we did our tour this summer, we visited some of these places, and for example, when we went to Crookston, well, first I would say that at every place we visited, 20 of the 21, the number one issue for students was the debt, and then corresponding with debt, you know, getting a job. Wasn't the case in Crookston. We got to Crookston, and they were all wearing T-shirts about their wellness center. And so we did our town hall listening session, and each you know, enthusiastic, high-energy young person told us that if they could ask one thing of the higher ed committee, it was the Crookston Wellness Center. So I was quite impressed with the unified vision of that campus, and they certainly persuaded me that this was something that was very important. Of course, it helps that the chair of the bonding committee happens to represent that area, so I think they might be in good stead. Another comment I just wanted to make is, and I have shared this with the president, but I wanted to make sure the members heard this too, is that I was probably most struck with the opportunity at Duluth in terms of seeing what that building really was today and what it could accomplish. When we look at the potential for UMD being a leader in the sciences and STEM and where they're positioned in terms of their geology and geography and the position they've taken in the health sciences, it seemed to me that having a laboratory from 1948, and it really looked like it, and you saw the asbestos tiles, and so I have just sworn that I was going to nobody's carrying that bill. If you look at the others, there's generally somebody carrying it. I said I was going to be that champion. So I'm not from Duluth, but President loves to hear that, I know. But I really am I'm a proponent of all those, but I did want to make special note of that because it really was lacking a champion, I thought. And then I would open it up to questions. Senator Claussen.
Madam Chair, thank you. Your request really focuses a lot on STEM improvements on the campus. I'm just wondering, we've had discussions in the past, will this increase our capacity for enrollment in the STEM areas?
President Kaler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Claussen, the short answer is yes. You have asked us, the legislature has asked us, to improve the rate of production of STEM graduates as a condition of a portion of our state funding, and we agree that this is an important element, and these will essentially, well, all of them, with the argument of the Wellness Center, will help us in STEM education, and it will probably create stronger and healthier STEM graduates in Crookston. I would, if you would allow me, take the opportunity to also address that these requests come in waves. So we have completed Falwell Hall on the Twin Cities campus. We will celebrate the opening of Northrop in April 4th, and moving forward with Tate will allow us to move earth science programming out of Pillsbury on the Twin Cities campus, which we will then propose to renovate for the English department. So this is not a STEM bias or a long-term trend on the part of the university, but rather represents the point in time that we are now in a continuum of evolution across our campuses.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. President Kaler, I have a question about the School of Agriculture. I have had a couple of meetings with both the School of Education and the School of Agriculture, and it seems to me that these capital improvement requests really tie to the work that is done in the School of Agriculture, and it just presents such an amazing potential for us in the state of Minnesota. And one thing that I heard at this meeting is that really the capacity of the university to engage the number of students that are applying to the university is simply not there. And that that right now there are only, I believe, 27, that the faculty capacity as well as the capacity of the university itself is not responding to the growing interest of young people who want to pursue this career. And they are very alarmed because they see that the trend is something that for the agricultural community should be of concern. And so my question is, you know, all of this attention devoted to kind of do the research that relates to the work that takes place, If we don't have the people, if we don't build the capacity to expand the training outside of the Twin Cities to really be in areas where we have a great deal of interest in these careers, is it helpful to have these state-of-the-art buildings and not have the people? So how do we get there? How do we address the issue of expanding the university's capacity to bring people? I believe that there were 77 applicants and only 29 got accepted, and all the 77. So we're talking about 77 that actually met criteria for coming in to the university for School of Agriculture, but they were just simply not enough spaces. So I think that's an alarming trend.
President Kaler.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, The pressure, the demand for slots at the university across all of our disciplines is really quite remarkable. This year we will have 45,000 applications for 5,500 spots in the entering class at the University of Minnesota. The demand in some of the areas is really just quite remarkable. In science and engineering, in the College of Biological Sciences, in the Carlson School of Management, there can be 10 applications for every spot that we have. We're in the midst of a strategic planning process in which we'll very carefully evaluate both where we are now and what the long-term demographics look like. And it's likely that we will propose not small but perhaps significant growth in areas where we see these kind of enormous pressures, qualified Minnesotans who we're not able to accommodate because of capacity issues. In the area of agriculture and particularly ag education, we see demand for those students from the industry, not only in ag ed, but in all areas of agriculture, because these are in some sense generalists in the agricultural education, and they're very highly sought. We have had a program in Crookston in ag ed. In response to the budget reductions a few years ago, that program was wound down. The Chancellor and I have had robust conversations about bringing that back, serving that portion of the state for students who want that kind of Crookston campus experience. I think makes a lot of sense. In other areas of agriculture and in the College of Biological Sciences, you're absolutely correct that we do not have physical capacity, nor do we have faculty capacity to meet all the demands.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, President. Members, I think that this is a very critical issue. You know, we have before us a request for, $200 million to build infrastructure. But I think the numbers are very compelling. You know, you have – could you repeat the numbers, Mr. President? It was 45
Madam Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, it's 45,000 applicants for 5,500 spaces in the first-year class.
I think that's amazing. Yeah. And so all of our conversations about, you know, access, expanding opportunities, achievement gap, and creating up – These conversations really don't get us to where these are people right. who could be, you know, obtaining these degrees and just doing what they have to do. They are, many of them, most of them are eligible to go. We don't have the space. We don't have the capacity. And I think that's a conversation we need to have in this committee, and we need to figure out how to resolve it. I think we're in a crisis. You know, our major university is just not able to offer these opportunities. So we can keep talking about opening opportunities. There's no capacity. So how do we reckon that?
Thank you. And we do have quite a network of colleges and universities around the state that are providing access and opportunity. But I agree with you. Questions,
Madam
comments?
Chair, if I may take mm-hmm. a follow-up on that, you are, of course, correct. So we do have a diverse range of institutions. Our Minsku colleagues provide great opportunities, and we celebrate the opportunities for transfers. We accept 3,000 transfer students a year who come typically for the third and fourth year of their undergraduate program. So Minnesota does have a robust system, but there are certainly choke points in certain areas at the university and I dare say at Minsku that need to be addressed.
And President Kaler, I was actually also thinking of the not-for-profit privates, which we have a very unusual many opportunities that actually, you know, if you look at the numbers in terms of what they provide to students in terms of actual cost of degree are not so dissimilar from what the university provides, and their outcomes are quite outstanding. So I agree with you. I think it's important that we do look at it all, but I think it's important also to look at it as a coordination of systems. Senator Sharon.
I just wanted to follow up on another thing that Senator Torres-Ray, or an opening statement, at least as I understood it, and that is, I understood your response that there's a great deal of demand for all of the programs at the university that you cannot meet. But Senator Torres-Ray was talking specifically about agriculture, and I just want to echo that there is concern that in an ag state of the with the industry as significant as it is here, that we are not doing what we need to do to inform students in the K-12 level of the opportunities in ag that may have more to do with why there may not even be more applicants for that. But also that the university is pursuing other needs in the workforce, and that we're I don't think abandoning is quite the right word, but certainly not showing the level of commitment to agriculture that should be there, given the size of that industry and the needs of that industry in the state. From chemistry, from biology, veterinary services, seed development, seed production. It's just a huge, huge river of industry. And so it concerns me when I'm hearing even from Metro legislators concerns about the fact that we're not at the university where we expect that role to be taken up, that we're not growing and focusing on that industry.
Mm-hmm.
President Kaler.
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, we take our agricultural commitment extraordinarily seriously. We are in regular contact with the agricultural industry. Food and food safety was one of the four Men Drive initiatives, along with water as a second. We're deeply committed in our College of Biological Sciences and in the College of Food, Agriculture, and Natural Resource Sciences to not only driving the research agenda, but also opening the eyes of students who might not expect to think about a career in agriculture as an option. One of the important educational elements that goes on, particularly as we draw more students from metro areas, and there are simply more students in the metro areas, the knowledge of production agriculture, food animal production, is simply not there. It's not in K-12, and so we work to bring that information to bear. We have a broad outreach in the state 4-H program, which runs through our extension and a variety of other outreach areas. But I always believe it's possible to do better, and this is an area in which it reflects a simple fact that we all like to eat. And this is a critically important part of Minnesota's economy, and we're paying as much attention to it as we can. But I appreciate your comments.
Thank you. Vice President Wheelock, if you could answer a question with regard to the aquatic invasive species request, could you share, I believe you've gotten money from the legacy funds in the past, and are there plans to for them to provide more funding, and is it necessary in your view? It must be because you put it in here, but just say something about that. Why bonding?
Thank you, Madam Chair. There have been funds that have been received for the research activities themselves, but with very limited exceptions, it's not funding that can be used for capital purposes.
Gotcha.
So we need to have the facilities in which the research can occur, and so it really is a partnership. In this case, it was led by the programmatic funding for the actual research activity, but it needs to be pretty quickly paired then with an investment in the facilities that give them the capacity to meet the obligations they have for the grant proceeds.
Good.
Madam Chair, if I might tag on to that, please. And we did this mindfully. We recognize that this is an emergency, and so we move forward with research in not really good space just to get the jump start on this, and now we're back to ask for the space. So it's a little bit of a, if you'll allow me, the chicken and egg analogy.
Well, it is an emergency, so good. Thank you. Well, you did your half hour. You were great, and I thank you for your presentation, and I want you to know that as the champion for the bonding request for higher ed, I think that we need to move it towards funding more than perhaps what came out in the governor's recommendation, and so we're going to work hard on that, and I just want to make sure you know that that's where we stand. And you'll get the particulars after we've done the survey with the committee. Before you leave, if the regents who are here and the rest of any staff who's here, just stand to be recognized by the committee. We so appreciate your leadership. So, Regent Simmons, Beeson, Devine, very good. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah,
we appreciate
you.
Your support.
Thank you, members. Now we'll move to Minskew. Now I see Chancellor Rosenstone. But Chancellor Rosenstone, I don't know, were you here for my introduction why I said we were just going to do very high level? They've actually heard the bills, but last session we did not give the committee a chance to fill out a survey, you know, with regard to their own recommendations, so I wanted to make sure everybody had the broadest overview of what you were requesting so they could take that into account as we put together the committee request.
Chair Bonoff, please to accommodate.
Thank you.
We're on the same page.
Very good. Hello, Mr. Beckett.
Thank you, Chair.
Yeah.
Chair Bonoff, members of the committee, I'm Stephen Rosenstone, Chancellor of Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and it's a great pleasure to be back with you again today. Seated with me is Trustee Michael Vekage, who's chair of the board's Finance and Facilities Committee. Joining Trustee Vekage is also Trustee Don Erlinson, Trustee Elise Ristau, who you spoke to earlier, and Trustee Luis Sundin. We also have with us 12 college presidents, college university presidents today. Presidents Larry Lundblad, Pat Johns, Sue Hammersmith, Phil Davis, Jim Johnson, Peggy Kennedy, Richard Davenport, Richard Shrub, Doug Allen, Adenuga Atawalugan, Annette Parker, and Scott Olson.
Chancellor, that's quite impressive. Could the presidents please stand up to be recognized? And the trustees also? Very good. So let's acknowledge their leadership, members. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair Bonhoff. And because this is the first time we've been before the committee since last March, I want to begin by first thanking all of you for the good work you did last session, for education in general, and especially, of course, for higher education. Thank you for the support you've given our students. Thank you for the investment you made in leveraged equipment. And thank you for reversing the trend of cuts that had been made to higher education for over the past decade. And I very much appreciate the listening tours and bonding visits that you made to our campuses last fall and over the summer. Our students in colleges and universities were very grateful for the opportunity to share their success as well as their challenges with you, and we look forward to more visits in the future. Chair Bonhoff, I'd like, with your permission, to begin today's discussion of our bond request by asking Trustee Vekage to briefly provide you the board's perspective on our proposal.
Thank you. Mr. Vekage.
Chair Bonhoff and members of the committee, on behalf of the Minsky Board of Trustees, thank you for the opportunity to be here today for today's discussion. Today we are presenting our bonding priorities on behalf of our colleges and universities, and I would like to convey the board's commitment to the proposal you will be reviewing. The chancellor is bringing these campus bonding priorities forward with the full support of the board, which has unanimously endorsed each element of the request. As a part of our deliberations, we have directed Chancellor Rosenstone, campus presidents, and system leaders to ensure that the focal point of our bonding request and the focal point of their leadership remains squarely on the more than 430,000 students of our colleges and universities that we serve each year. Our bonding request reflects that focus. As you will see, our request meets our obligation to serve our students. It meets our obligations to deliver the graduates required to keep Minnesota businesses and communities economically vibrant and competitive. Let me assure you, this board is tenacious in our oversight and unyielding in our demand for accountability from Chancellor Rosenstone, as well as our campus leaders and system leaders. In the case of bonding, the priorities for our campuses that we will review with you today are the result of an inclusive and rigorous process driven by our colleges and universities. This process ensures that only the highest priorities are presented to you for consideration. These priorities reflect guidance from the board on the intent and the focus of our funding request, as well as the campus-level priorities for capital investment. In addition, we are pleased with our track record of fast, efficient execution on priorities that have received legislative approval. In closing, I want to emphasize that our colleges and universities are a tremendous state resource, a resource that needs your support and represents an outstanding investment in state taxpayers' dollars. Our campuses are critical to the economic success of Minnesota's regional and local communities. And our colleges and universities offer students from all backgrounds the opportunity to create a better future for themselves and their families. The board clearly understands the critical role Minsky plays in ensuring Minnesota's prosperity and that our collective success as a state requires. To fulfill our mission, we now need your support for common sense investments required to maintain the integrity of the buildings where student learning occurs, and for targeted capital projects necessary to meet high growth demand workforce needs. With those comments, Chair Bonhoff and committee members, I will turn it over to Chancellor Rosenstone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Vekage. Before I ask Associate Vice Chancellor Brian Yolitz to provide you with some of the details of the request, I would like to very briefly share with you some of our progress on a number of fronts since we were last together. Our state colleges and universities awarded nearly 42,000 diplomas, certificates, and degrees last year, a 10.5% increase over the 2009-2010 academic year. We have seen a 6% increase in the number of our graduates who found employment in fields related to the areas of study. This year, our colleges and universities are serving over 430,000 students across Minnesota, 130,000 of which are at work across the state in businesses and industries that have asked us to provide customized training and advanced education programs to their employees. Through our work with the Itasca Project, which we'll have an opportunity to talk about in a couple weeks, our campuses are collaborating with DEED, with the Chamber, and with companies large and small across Minnesota to ensure that we graduate students prepared for the careers that Minnesota needs to compete globally. We are partnering with Education Commissioner Casilius to implement the historic legislation that you passed last session to redesign the transition from secondary to post-secondary education to ensure that students are better prepared and on track for post-secondary education and high-demand, high-growth careers. And on the affordability front, we are one quarter into our scholarship drive, but we have already raised $9 million in private funds, nearly half of the $20 million goal that we have set for the biennium. And to keep taxpayer dollars and tuition focused on the classroom and on student success, we are on track to produce the $44 million in efficiencies, cost controls, and reallocations this year and next. In short, we are committed to ensuring that our colleges and universities continue to be the lowest cost, highest value post-secondary option in Minnesota. And we could not have moved forward on these initiatives without your support and the support of Governor Dayton. And for that, I say thank you. Now let me turn to the overview of our request. Three priorities have shaped our bonding request. Number one, provide the practical learning spaces needed to increase student success and prepare students for jobs and careers. Number two, reduce costs by improving the efficient use of facilities and by replacing or eliminating obsolete space. And number three, ensure that Minnesota's workforce needs are met by graduates prepared for the jobs of the future, jobs that will keep communities across Minnesota globally competitive. Our request for $234.5 million in general obligation bond funds, in combination with $52 million in college and university funding, will enable a $286.5 million strategic capital investment program that will help us increase student success. 100% of our proposal is for projects that directly benefit students and the quality of their education. We are committed to taking care of our educational facilities. We are committed to right-sizing our campuses to use space more efficiently to reduce costs. Last month, Governor Dayton incorporated many of our priorities into his recommended bonding list, including $114 million in general obligation bonding for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and we deeply appreciate the governor's support. It touches in one way or another 41 of our college and university campuses and 38 communities across Minnesota. We ask that you support the projects before you because of the impact they will have on our students and because they will improve our ability to help students succeed in becoming the creative, highly skilled workforce Minnesota needs to compete globally. This investment will impact approximately 1.6 million square feet, or about 7% of our campus's 22 million square feet in academic space. Half of the projects represent renovation and renewal of existing space. Less than one-fifth of the program is dedicated to new space. If fully executed, our proposal will reduce our overall footprint by 250,000 square feet. This reduction in square footage will reduce costs and advance affordability. In closing, I want to note that every single project we are proposing, From the most innovative new building with state-of-the-art learning spaces to the most basic cooling and heating and roof repairs, everyone has a direct impact on students. Our proposal impacts all of Minnesota, Central, Northwest, Northeast, Metro, Southwest, and Southeast Minnesota. And with that as an introduction, Madam Chair, I'd like to, with your permission, invite Associate Vice Chancellor Brian Yolitz to walk you through some of the details.
Thank you, Chancellor. And members, in the packet before you, each individual project is spelled out. And if the governor did not recommend it, it says not recommended by governor. If it doesn't say that, it means it was part of the governor's recommendation. Okay, Mr. Yolitz.
Madam Chair, committee members, as Chancellor Rosenstone indicated in his initial remarks, Minnesota State College and University seeks $234.5 million in state funding for capital bonding priorities. Within these priorities, $130.6 million are focused on direct asset preservation through HEPA work and select demolition of obsolete space. There are 24 major capital investment line item projects impacting 29 campuses in 26 communities around the state of Minnesota. If fully funded, this request would increase costs by roughly 62 cents per credit if the annual debt payment was exclusively serviced by tuition. This represents about a 1/3 of 1% of the tuition and fees paid by an average college and university student for fiscal year 2014. Said another way, the average college or university student would see about $18.60 of their annual tuition and fees rate of $5,736 set towards the annual debt service associated with the projects. Again, if tuition was the only source of funds and if the entire program was funded. Every project is before you is shovel ready, meaning it is the pre-designs are complete, the preparatory work and prior year investments are complete, and the projects are ready to move forward with the next phase of design or construction. To get a sense of our capital budget request, it's important to get an understanding of our facilities and the footprint associated with them. Our colleges and universities play a vital role in every region of the state of Minnesota. They serve 430,000 students through 54 campuses in 47 communities. The campuses total 28 million square feet in facility space. That's roughly five malls of America entrusted to our college universities. They're just spread out in 54 different operating locations. This represents approximately 1/3 of Minnesota's total public facility space. 80% of our college and university facility space is academic space and eligible for capital bonding. The balance includes residence halls, dining facilities, student unions, wellness and fitness centers, and parking ramps, which are not funded by state funds. They are funded by user fees through our revenue fund. The vast majority of our academic facilities were built prior to 1975, and as our facilities and their systems age, so does the need for investment in those facilities and systems. Our analysis estimates that the deferred maintenance backlog and the anticipated asset preservation needs over the next 5 years totals $1.2 billion. From campus master planning and space utilization measures, we recognize there are spaces where our facility space is not entirely aligned with our academic programs for now or in the future. And our college university and some of our college universities, they require more space. The age, condition, and utilization of our existing academic space and the alignment with college university academic needs drove the development of the capital investment priorities before you. As I mentioned earlier, this capital request focuses on asset preservation, renewal, and repurposing of our existing academic facility space. It's built on our investment strategy of catching up with the backlog of maintenance. Our goal is to cut the backlog of this backlog in half over the next 10 years and keeping up with those emerging maintenance needs as they come due in the next 5 years. College universities deliver on this strategy through a series of avenues. First, the board has set a goal for college universities to invest $1 per square foot of their own campus funds in their academic spaces. Over the past several years, college universities have met and exceeded that goal by investing nearly $29 million of campus funds in existing space. we invest a great deal of our own funds to take care of what we have. HEPR is the board's number one priority. Roughly 50% of our request addresses building envelope integrity issues, roofs, walls, windows, and doors. Another one-third of the is for HVAC systems, including boilers, air conditioners, and air handling units. The balance would addresses electrical plumbing challenges, corrects codes, code compliance issues, and executes design work for future projects. We recognize that we cannot rely exclusively on HEPR or state funding to meet all of our needs. We are pursuing alternative financing to address some of our asset preservation work through guaranteed energy savings contracts, where realized energy savings helps pay the cost and financing of facility work. There's a contract currently in place at Winona State University, and we're in the process of partnering with Department of Commerce at St. Cloud State University with the state's largest guaranteed energy savings contract project underway at this time. Our major capital projects also play an important role in our asset preservation strategy. Many of our capital projects include asset preservation elements as part of the total request. When you include HEPR, our request preserves and improves over 750,000 square feet of existing academic space. Our goal is to always walk away from a construction effort with a truly complete and usable facility ready to serve students well into the future. Removal of obsolete space is critical to the responsible management of scarce resources. It is a key component of college and university master plans. We have sold obsolete buildings when they're no longer in service, or no longer serviceable, or no longer serve our academic and programmatic needs. Campus space has also been leased out to outside agencies, including DEED and workforce centers, the Forestry Service, and other agencies. We also have included in this request the demolition within existing capital projects that you see before you. And like you, we're focused on affordability. That's why we've advanced a demolition initiative that would remove obsolete space. When you couple that with a demolition associated with the capital projects, we expect to remove over 500,000 square feet and take that offline, eliminating more than $10 million in maintenance backlog and renewal needs over the next 10 years. We continue to consider options for reducing cost of education and enhancing affordability imposed by aging facility space. We will pursue alternative uses where there is a positive impact on students and affordability, and we will not demolish space where campus leaders identify viable alternatives in the future. The capital investment priorities for Minnesota State College universities address Minnesota's workforce needs. While these priority projects touch a wide array of programs, they predominantly focus on these five broad categories. Academic facilities and spaces supporting businesses, manufacturing, and trades are enhanced by investments at college and university campuses in Bemidji, St. Paul, Winona, White Bear Lake and Matamidi, and Anoka. STEM continues to be a prominent need for Minnesota. Capital investment priorities at college and university campuses in Red Wing, St. Paul, and North Mankato directly provide better learning environments for studies in the fields of science, technology, engineering, and math. Preparing teachers and supporting student success is critical to building and sustaining a highly skilled workforce for Minnesota. Priority projects here in St. Paul and in Staples, Rochester, St. Cloud, Winona, and Fergus Falls invest in facilities and programs that prepare teachers for tomorrow and make students successful today. Capital projects in Duluth, Mankato, Grand Rapids, International Falls, Ely, Hibbing, East Grand Forks, and Winona directly support educating and training Minnesota's health and medical workforce for tomorrow. The MSU Mankato Clinical Design or Science Design, funded in 2012, is complete and is ready for construction funding this session. The automotive and transportation sectors are supported with investments in academic facilities at campuses in Anoka, Rosemount, Moorhead, and Thief River Falls. The projects at Dakota County and Northland both build upon investments made as part of the FY 2012 bonding session. In summary, Madam Chair and Committee, Minnesota State College and University seeks your support in providing $234 million in state funding to execute priority capital program totaling $286.5 million. These priorities are focused on creating a better future for Minnesota by preserving the academic facilities we have and need, and by creating space that meets Minnesota's workforce needs. Every project is shovel-ready, and with your support and funding, every project will move forward to the next phase of design or construction. We thank you for your time and attention. Chancellor?
Chair Bonhoff, members of the committee, as promised, a brief overview, and we look forward to your discussion. The projects are tremendously important. They're important to our students, they're important to the communities we serve, and they're critically important to making sure that our students are prepared for the work they will need to do when they graduate. Our request is an investment in the economic prosperity of Minnesota. It will help us to provide the practical learning spaces needed to increase student success and prepare students for jobs and careers. It will keep education affordable by reducing facility costs. And it will graduate Minnesotans ready to be the workforce Minnesota needs to compete globally. On behalf of our 31 colleges and universities and the 430,000 students we serve across Minnesota, we ask for your support for this proposal, and we look forward to your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chancellor. Members, I know some of you are carrying the bills individually that are contained in these, so feel free to let us know your thoughts or if you have any questions. Senator Sharon.
Well, I just want to have you talk again about, because these committees are being asked to review these requests and make recommendations to the bonding committee, that when you take a look at this folder that you gave us,
yes,
which lists all of the projects and somewhat of a project description, many of which we've seen bonding tours and stuff, there is a listing of your priorities here, and you have indicated, you mentioned this again today, I know this from the past, that there is a rigorous process that the Minsky system, it's part of the value of the system, is that all of the requests from all of the systems come and get filtered through a process in which you establish priorities against a set of objectives or goals you have for the Minsky system. And this reflects what you would say are the order of the priorities that you have to meet the goals that you have established for the system. Is that correct?
Chancellor.
Chair Bonhoff, Senator Sharon, that is absolutely correct. The scoring process involves colleagues from all the colleges and universities. It's an objective process where there's points assigned based on the criterion that have been established by the board. I review the recommendations that come forward, and the recommendations are formally the recommendations of our Board of Trustees based on this scoring process that was in place. These are indeed in priority order based on the board's approval.
Thank you,
Senator Sharon.
I think that's important for us to take into account when we're being asked to give feedback, that we really appreciate the fact that there's a very deliberate thoughtful process that goes into establishing these priorities. To have us sort of coming along and reorganizing them, I'd have to be persuaded somehow as to why we think we can do a better job of determining the priorities over a process like that that is being established.
Senator Sharon, I too am impressed with their process for prioritizing, and in fact that the material that Dave put forward in your packet is listed in their priority order, just so to show you that we do follow their priority order. So that's in the packet. So besides the one they gave you, we also gave you an overview.
It's behind a letter.
Yes, exactly. It starts with a bill, and then the University of Minnesota's request, and then the Minsky request, and then each of those are listed in priority order. Got it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Senator Klassen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chancellor, just a question on the almost 550,000 square feet that's going to be taken out of commission through demolition. Can you give a timeline on how long you're looking into the future, X amount of years to do this, or maybe just elaborate on that a little bit?
Chancellor.
Senator Bonhoff, Senator Klassen, let me take a stab at it, and Vice Chancellor Yolitz can give us more details. Everything that we have requested in this proposal will be executed during the 2 years of the biennium,
okay,
the 2 years ahead of us. So we are not proposing projects that give us help now, but expect a return in 4 or 5 years. These are all executable over the next 2 years. We do not like coming before this committee or the bonding committee with projects that were not completed. And so these projects would be executed during the next 2 years.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention two very good projects that I'm carrying, one at Winona State University and one at Minnesota State College, Southeast Technical, which has campuses in Winona and Red Wing, two very good projects that I'll certainly continue to be a strong advocate for.
And Senator,
perhaps Senator Sharon, I could do some persuading on those two projects.
Are they out of order? Are they not in the correct order?
Oh, Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, we're just fine, I think.
And Senator Miller, I have to underscore your Education Village project, because that is a very impressive project that really brings forward a comprehensive approach to teacher education that I think we would all be well served by funding that project. So I'm hopeful that we get down to that level. And I know it wasn't the governor's recommendation, but I believe the governor didn't give quite as much HEPR as we'd all like, so then that makes it more challenging. So our solution is, of course, to just have higher education get a greater share in total of the bonding bill.
Senator Bonoff, we could work with you on that.
I would ask you to just comment for a minute about the tuition comment that Brian made, because you mentioned the, you know, for your share, that it equates to $18.60, I believe you said. And I know, you know, we made a pretty strong statement with regard to tuition freeze, and it doesn't necessarily go into the next biennium because that hasn't been addressed. But given the, you know, what the message was, what's your plan with regard to your share?
Senator Bonoff, members of the committee, please do not misunderstand us. We are not suggesting that we're going to ignore the legislation and sneak in an $8 and whatever cent 18, tuition increase for our students. That was not the proposal.
You're sharing what it would cost if tuition paid for it.
We're trying to convey to you that the impact potentially is to use 62 cents a credit of student resources if 100% were paid for by students. Another way to think of it is roughly 35-40% of our entire budget is covered by the state of Minnesota, the remaining covered by our students. So another way to think of it is roughly 60% of 62 cents per credit would fall to our students. So we're trying to be clear and straightforward and transparent about what the impact potentially would be if the entire package were funded on those students living on a campus that had a capital project.
Thank you. Very good. Clear. Members, any other questions at this time? Well, pretty darn good. We did each one in exactly the time allotted. Thank you. Well done. And thank you. You know, so for those presidents who are here, I don't want you to think that because you weren't at the table advocating for your particular project that it was not useful for you to be here. It makes such a difference for the committee to know how important it is to you that you made sure to be here today to support the chancellor in making this presentation. So thanks to all of those who came to be here with us today.
Thank you, Chair Bonoff.
Thank you. So now I'm going to give the gavel over to Senator Claussen, and we are going to take up the governor's unsession bill, or the agency's unsession bill, and I will speak a little bit about how we arrived at it when I'm at the other side of the table. So pass over the gavel.
Mm-hmm.
Quick. Senator Bonoff, welcome to the Higher Education Workforce Development Committee. It's good to see you in that seat.
Thank you.
Ms. Grimes as well, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I just wanted to begin by explaining the process we went through to get to the bill that's before you, Senate File 2224. So the Office of Higher Education brought to Representative Pawlowski and myself literally an 80-page bill that listed all of their best thinking around what could be deleted from our statutes, what was no longer relevant to a 21st century economy, to words that were redundant, to things that really weren't even around anymore. And they asked us to consider putting those forward in a bill. Chair Pawlowski and I went through a very deliberate process using some rules as our framework. So we met approximately six times. We met with our fiscal analysts, our counsel, our staff in a room, and poured through all 80 pages. And the rules we used to evaluate were, number one, it couldn't have anything controversial in it, because this was not the point of an unsessioned bill. That was just to get rid of things that were no longer useful. That was number one rule. Number two, it couldn't open up a chapter of law that would likely become a vehicle for amending things, whether it be in the committee or on the floor. We wanted to have our unsessioned bill be very tight, non-controversial, and something that we could all agree to. And so we didn't want to get into the practice of amending chapters of law that were outside of the scope of what was originally intended. And the third thing is, we did not want to put items in the unsessioned bill that would end up in other committees, and then we would in fact lose control of the bill and we could no longer be accountable for what was in the bill. So if it would then have gone to judiciary or state and local, we said it wasn't. And then finally, we informally gave each other veto power. So if one of us didn't want it in the bill, then didn't go in the bill. So the 80-page document became what you have before you, which is a very slimmed-down version of an unsessioned bill, in which Chair Pawlowski is introducing the identical one. And, you know, to be fair, there's some apology due the Office of Higher Ed. They went to so much work to put forward their best thinking and then to come back with really a much slimmer, they might say less meaningful document, I'm sure was not easy. So having said that, I do have before us the bill summary that could take you through each of these, but Ms. Grimes, would you like to do that?
Madam Chair, I would be happy to. Tricia Grimes from the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. As the summary indicates, there are quite a few places in the bill where the shortening up occurs by changing Minnesota Office of Higher Education to office. There, in fact, are 25 sections of this bill that do that. So I will not plan to go through all of those. I'm assuming that's a relatively non-controversial item. And there are another 19 sections that change the phrases Board of Trustees and Board of Trustees of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities to Board. Again, just shortening up the words a bit. So those two between them probably constitute, 40% to 50% of the bill. Would you like me to proceed through the bill, kind of skipping over some of those that are just technical?
I actually think, you know, it may be easiest to just go through the bill summary if you'd like.
Through the bill summary. Okay, so Section 1 is a technical correction, just changing a long phrase on lines 2.2 to just say to public post-secondary institution, to reduce verbiage.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, Ms. Grimes. For example, Section 1, 14, 15, 17, 23 make technical corrections, and you could just leave it at that.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Yeah. Section 2, there were two different provisions on required immunizations, one on hepatitis and one on meningitis, that were almost exactly the same. And so their two are being combined into one section. And one of them is being repealed, and the repealer is at the end of the bill. And this language was run by the Department of Health and the University of Minnesota. Section 3 takes definitions that were scattered throughout the chapter, puts them all in one place, and then eliminates the need for some definitions elsewhere. Okay. Section 4 is one of those technical ones. So is Section 5. Section 5 is a grammar correction. Some of you may know that the office had a small contract with Peter Watson. And Peter Watson is something of a stickler for grammar, so he found a few places that we could improve. Good. Moving on to Section 7 on page 4. There are some grammar corrections there, but also on lines 4.16 and 4.17 is removing some obsolete language and replacing it with more generic language enacted by the Congress of the United States so that it wouldn't have to be amended every time the Congress changes that bill. On page 5 is sections 8 and 9 are the technical correction on office. Sections 10 and 11 on page 5, instead of saying quarter semester or the equivalent, it's just changing it to term, and there was a definition for term up there at the front of the bill. That definition of term is also in Section 12 on page 6. Section 13 has a definition for award year, which is the same as the state fiscal year. It's July 1st each year to June 30th of the following year. It's what we've done for years, but it puts it into statute. Section 14 on page 6 replaces a reviser's note by removing that language from being a reviser's notes into regular statutory language. And Section 15 has a parallel change on the reviser's note. Section 16 is one of the technical changes. And Section 17 is has to do with the child care grant program and is language that makes it parallel to the others about students who withdraw from military service or documented major illness being eligible for an additional term of eligibility. Section 18 on lines 8.21 to 8.23 strikes some language that is obsolete. Section 19 on page 8 is updating language and replacing some long phrases with shorter ones. On page 9, there are lines 9.8 through 9.10 strike obsolete language to federal programs that no longer exist. And then in 9.19 through 9.21 are updates to change that to refer to award year. Section 21 is one of those technical changes again. So is 22. Section 23 on page 10 is removing some obsolete language that is from many years ago when the Office of Higher Education was one of many lenders in the Federal Stafford Loan Program. Section 24 is a technical change. Section 25 is a updating. Section 26 is the technical change. So is 27 and 28. Also 29 and 31. 32 and 33. 34, 35, 36, 37, 38. On page 16, in line 16.3, is removing obsolete language on reference to the profiles of learning, which is no longer in Minnesota law. And Section 40 is a clarification that the degrees they are referring to it led to an associate or higher degree. Section 41 is updating language to include the word college in the phrase that would trigger regulation. Sections 42, and this goes on for a bit, through 44 are the technical change on changing it to office. Starting in Section 45, you will see there are a number of places where there are changes of Board of Trustees to Board at Minskew. Section 46 is a clarification about members appointed to who are trustees and are currently has to do with student members that are enrolled at the time of appointment. Excuse me. And sections 47, 48 are the technical change on board. Section 49 is clarification that the labor member could be appointed sooner than 6 years if a vacancy were to occur. Section 50 in lines 20.11 to 20.12, and I might note I'm already two-thirds of the way through the bill, so we are getting there.
You're doing good.
Crosses out some obsolete language relating to the merger of the systems that happened in 1995. Section 51 updates the list of locations at MNSCU, of MNSCU campuses. Sections 52 is one of those changes on board, technical change. Sections 53, 50, and 54 are removing references to the term center because they no longer use that term at MNSCU. Sections 55 is a board. On page 22, section 56, lines 22.12 to 22.14, is striking some obsolete language that has dates in the 1990s. Section 57, 58, 59, 60, at 59 are the change to board. On page 24 in line 24.5 is another update suggested by Peter Watson, changing amount to funds. 61, 62, 63, 64, 65 are changed to board, as are 67, 68, 69, 70, 71. At the bottom of page 29, section 72 is about the college savings plan, and it removes an obsolete maximum account balance from 2004 and 2005. That program is governed by section 529 of the Federal Internal Revenue Code, and the maximum account balances are set really under that code. Starting in section 3, there's a bit of language about the University of Minnesota. This strikes requirements on recreational programs that had to do with the construction of the stadium that are all dates from 2007. So all of section 3 is stricken except for lines 30.16 to 30.19, which are being left as is. Okay, in the revisor's instruction, the revisor's instruction A on page 31, and we're getting very close to the end here, is saying that if there are any remaining references to the Office of Higher Education that they missed, that they be changed to office is A. B provides that the high school to college developmental transition program administered by our office be taken out of Chapter 135A and put into Chapter 136A because that's the chapter that governs the Office of Higher Education. Revisor's instruction C provides that any remaining references to Board of Trustees be shortened to Board. And revisor's instruction D provides that all the cross-references be corrected. Now, would you like me to run through the repealers?
Please.
Okay, Mr. Chair and members, the repealer of 135A.14 sub 6. And
members, I'm just a stickler for repealers because that's the one place I know that as members we're always suspicious, like there's something snuck in repealers, and I want to make sure everybody knows nothing is snuck in a repealer. So that's why.
Okay, so 135A.14 sub 6 is that one on immunization. Since we combined two different required immunizations into one, we're eliminating one of those sections here. No change in the actual immunizations required. Repealer 136A.05 sub 2 repeals language on post-secondary institutions providing data to House and Senate legislators and staff. Legislators and staff already have the authority to request the data. 136A.101 sub 2 repeals definitions which were newly relocated up at the front of Chapter 136A and 136A.002. 136A.15 subs 3 and 5 repealed definitions of office and province, which, again, were moved up at the front. 136A.16 subs 3, 4, 6, and 7 repeal language on loan amounts and so forth that had to do with when the agency was a federal student loan lender. And the U.S. Department of or the Congress passed law in 2010 that made the U.S. Department of Education the sole provider of federal loans, so that language is now obsolete. And that's also true of 136A.17. 136A.62 sub 2, again, it repeals language that's made unnecessary now that we have the definitions up at the front of the bill. 136F.11 is language referring to Minsky, and it repeals some language relating to normal schools, which was a phrase used for teacher education institutions many years ago. 136F.44 repeals a subdivision mandating a summary of activities on administrative interaction with students in 1998-99. 136F.49 repeals licensure language on licensure of teaching personnel in Minsky two-year institutions. And it's my understanding that that's obsolete now that the merger in place. There are very few of these licenses remaining. 136F.90 sub 6 repeals language on payment of interest on revenue bonds, and then which Minsky already has the authority to do. 137.02 sub 1 has to do with the University of Minnesota, and it repeals language on the transportation of supplies from one campus to another via the Minnesota Transfer Railway Company. Very old language. 137.59 has to do with the Stadium Neighborhood Impact Report, which was funded or provided as part of the construction of the stadium and is now no longer needed. 136A.101 sub 3, again, repeals definitions which are newly located at the front of the chapter. 136A.15 sub 4 has to do with student loan program definitions, which again have been moved to the beginning of the chapter. Getting down to the last few. 136A.16 sub 10 repeals language on loan amounts and so forth, again, from when the agency was a federal student loan lender. And then there are a repealer of two groups of rules. Rules 48.10.2100 through 48.10.2800 have to do with medical and osteopathy loans, which the agency offered years ago and which now all the borrowers have repaid their loans. And then the repealer of 4830.5000 through 4830.5400 also have to do with when the office was a federal student loan lender many years ago.
Thank you, Ms. Grimes. Mr. Chair?
You know, on behalf of the committee, Senator Boniff and Representative Pulaski, I'd like to thank you for your thoughtful work. It's a lot of hours you put in, and especially with developing the criteria before you ever started, so you had a starting point, and that's always important. Before asking for questions, I do have a question that suddenly popped out at me because I think it affects the area that I serve. That's on page 30. Line 16, 30.16. I think it's referencing Umore, the Umore property. It does not specifically say that. But I know that there's been a lot of controversy on the contamination of that area and who's responsible. And it indicates that annually the Department of Defense is to report. Do you know if that's occurring? Because I think they've kind of washed their hands of the issue.
Pretty specific question, I know. Members, but I would like to defer to somebody from the University of Minnesota to answer that question, if possible.
And if we can't, if we can't get an answer, perhaps it's something you could get back to us on. I'm just.
And Mr. Chair, I remember we actually did talk about that and made sure we didn't touch it because of the sensitivity to the issue. Yes, yes. So, good question.
Thank you. Was there someone from the University of Minnesota I'd like to respond? Or
Fitz didn't know. Mr. Chair, I do also want to acknowledge, I know Commissioner Pogemiller's here, and really the amount of time that Chair Pulaski and I
spent was nothing compared to what the Office of Higher Ed spent, what MNSCU spent, what the U spent, what the IFO spent, what the, you know, all the various groups, the students. They put so much work into this. And so Commissioner Pogemiller, you weren't here at the beginning, but I actually did publicly say that, you know, we understand that for all the work you put into it, what you got was a very skinny document. And so we can imagine that that must be disappointing. And those rigid rules that dictated how this got put together, that was the result of that. But we do want to thank you. And we did take it very seriously and just understand that the legislative process is such that things are pretty difficult to get through. But this is a beginning. So thank you.
And Commissioner Pogemiller, thank you on behalf of the committee for your work as well and that of your staff. Any comments, questions? Yes, Senator Sharon.
Just because of your goal to your goals that you established before reducing that, is there a plan or are you planning to bring the rest of those recommendations forward next year?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, we are going to bring some of those forward. You'll see in individual bills this year, and members are certainly will circulate the whole thing. And so other members are welcome to pick and choose things that you're interested in. So there's no concrete plan to bring all those things forward. Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, we didn't agree with all of them.
Just to make sure I understood what you said. So the things that you didn't agree with that were proposed have been put in separate bills?
No. Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, no. We just didn't bring them forward.
So what are these other bills that I'm sorry that you were talking
about?
There were
Mr. Chair, yes. Senator Sharon, there were a few things that were in there that some of us did want to put forward.
Okay.
And so put those into bill form. But it's a big body of work that I'm happy to circulate. And if anyone would like to bring forward any of them, whether it be this session or next session.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
There were, Mr. Chair and Senator Sharon, there were like three buckets. There was ones that the Office of Higher Ed figured wouldn't be controversial at all, and some of those actually between Chair Pawlowski and I, they were more controversial than expected. Some were things that they just put in a bucket called please consider, and so those, because of our parameters, didn't get put forward. And then there was another bucket that was the
policy changes.
Yeah, actual changes to policy that the Office of Higher Ed thought wouldn't be controversial at this time, but they were actual content changes, and so they didn't get put forward.
Okay. Other questions? Do we have any public comment?
And also, for the record, Mr. Chair, for example, I see IFO represented here by Russ Stanton, and I know they made comments, and then we actually changed our bill. We got it rejacketed based on comments. So we really were attempting to make sure that not just for us internally, but for the broadest group, we followed those guidelines.
Senator Bonoff, would you like to move?
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 2224 be recommended to pass and move to the floor.
Very good. We've had a motion to move Senate File 2224 to the floor. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? We shall move. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, you're welcome to adjourn the meeting.
I thought perhaps you'd like to come back up.
members, Dave, do you want to just remind members what next Tuesday's agenda will be?
Nothing on Thursday. Next Tuesday or this Thursday?
This Thursday.
This Thursday.
Madam Chair, you had my hopes up that Thursday. We didn't have a meeting. I could get home in time.
So Thursday we have overviews from Deed and talking about workforce development, and then we'll hear from Dolly, Labor and Industry, Department of Labor and Industry, on some of the programs they're doing, particularly in regards to apprenticeships.
But in particular, members, and I'm hoping that you all will be able to come, because that's going to be the first conversation where we examine where the money's coming from and where it's going. So
very
thank
good.
You.
There being no further business before the committee, we are